So, tonight, I am going to introduce a talk a little bit about a practice called Tonglen. Before I do, I'm going to start with a brief statement about karma. Karma, at its most simple, the teaching of karma in the Zen school is that what you do matters. What you do has a impact on this one entity that is you and the universe together. What you do matters. The actions you take with your body, the words you speak with your mouth, and in a way, most especially, the way you use your mind silently to yourself. Whether it takes the form of talking to yourself or rehearsing grudges, hurts, shortcomings of yourself or the universe. The way you use your mind matters. And using your mind in patterns that perpetuate and strengthen the energies of pushing away what we don't like, or the energy of actively cultivating dislike of something. The energies of wanting that thing over there, or the energies of telling ourselves how much better it would be if we had that. Or getting caught in this fundamental one word is delusion, another word more generous might be only partial truth at best of the separation of what's inside, what's outside, what happens here and what happens in the world. Strengthening those energies ultimately causes more suffering. It feeds the fire, puts fuel on the fire of the way you cause suffering for yourself. The way your body, mouth, and mind can cause suffering in the world. And in a way, the habitual patterns in which we use our mind, the habitual ways we use our mind, the habitual patterns we fall into, kind of wears like a groove, a rut, in the dirt path of the mind road, if you're with me. So, you know, imagine a dirt path that's traveled by, bikes or carts or something with a kind of narrow wheel. And the more you travel back and forth over this path, the more you rehearse in your mind these scenarios of suffering, these scenarios of isolation, the scenarios of grasping aversion and certainty. The more you wear this little teeny groove where you've been going back and forth. And then you're kind of increasing the gradient around that groove. So that you get pulled into it, and then it becomes easier to be there and harder to get out. Part of what the practice, the baseline practice of Zazen is noticing we've fallen into that groove, and noticing that by unhooking and returning back to our breath, if we're doing breath practice, or by just recognizing that groove as that groove and desisting from putting more energy into it, if we're doing shikantaza. That in a way, what that does is kind of pop us out of that groove. This is the opportunity to be choicefully present in our life. To notice that we've fallen into that groove and then start to have a moment where we can say, okay, so here I am doing this thing. Who do I mean to be right here? What's useful? What's skillful? what's kind. And the practice of Zazen strengthens our ability to have that moment where we have an opportunity to ask ourselves, who do I mean to be? Without that baseline practice of Zazen, there's no choicefulness. And the Zen path, on or off the cushion, is about being choicefully present to the whole of your lives. But even so, even when we practice this, noticing we're in this groove and popping back out, there's still this groove that we've worn with so many years, decades, lifetimes of using our mind in this way. We've still got this deep rut in this road. And it's true, it is completely true that through the practices of the Zen school, we can be free of that rut in any moment. And, as so often happens, in the next moment, we fall in, and then we can be free in that moment. And that is whole and complete and sufficient and excellent. And there is another way you can use your mind that is kind of the equivalent of shoveling some additional dirt into that rut, smoothing out that pitted kind of gradient to get yourself back onto equal ground. And we have put so much energy over the course of our lives into strengthening these habit patterns that it is, though it's not a problem that we have the habit energy that we have the karma, the experience, the background, the history that we have. None of this is a problem. None of this is ultimately a barrier. And we can also cultivate different habits. And this cultivating different habits is not exactly what Zazen does. Can be in a way, it's certainly not in conflict. But the practice of Zazen, and especially the practice of Zazen is a simple noticing, unhooking from a storyline, and if you're following the breath, returning to the breath. If you're counting the breath, returning to the breath and one. And if you're practicing Shikantaza, practice that some people do after some number of years, probably, of working with the breath, after having built a foundation of breath practice, some people move on to a practice called Shikantaza, which is a really radical non-doing, a radical desisting from all activity. And this practice that I'm going to talk about tonight is not that. The practice that I'm going to talk about, Tonglen, is a practice of doing. It is a practice of putting some dirt back into that rut of habit energy. And I want to talk about it in the context of this interpretation of the Kanzeon Sutra, the Emejuku Kunangyo that we chant. Absorbing world sounds awakens a Buddha right here. This Buddha, the source of compassion. This Buddha receives only compassion. So, this absorbing world sounds isn't just about the auditory acoustic experience of the literal sounds in the world, although it includes that. It is also a image. The sounds of the world are all the sounds of the world suffering, all the cries of the world, all the wailing, the screaming, the teeth gnashing cries of the world, absorbing those sounds, it awakens a Buddha right here. And the reason that we use these words in the context of the Kanungyo here, the name, Kanon, Kanzeon in Japanese, those are both Japanese, or Avalokiteshvara in Sanskrit, Kuan Yin or Kuan Seon in Chinese or Korean. This is the name of the Bodhisattva of compassion, the transcendent embodiment, the transcendent non-embodiment of compassion. This isn't a being. It is, and it isn't anything outside of us. It is the compassionate property of the universe itself, embodied. That name, Kanzeon, Avalokiteshvara, and so on, means the one who beholds the cries of the world, the one who absorbs the sounds of the world, the one who lets in all the world's suffering. This is the practice of compassion. This letting in, this bearing witness. When we recite or take the precepts in Zen, the guidelines for living, the second pure precept says, bearing witness to the joys and sufferings of the world, I vow to practice good. Bearing witness. This bearing witness is the practice of compassion. And this bearing witness doesn't require the world be any particular way. It isn't a fixing, it isn't an intervening, it isn't a changing. Bearing witness is a non-dual practice. It's a non-conditional practice, because it isn't about trying to do anything. It isn't about trying to change anything. There's no way to verify that bearing witness has failed. Bearing witness is full and complete in itself. Turning our hearts towards is full and complete. And this practice of turning towards, this practice of letting in our own suffering, this practice of letting in the world awakens a Buddha right here, right here. This is Buddha's practice. This turning towards, bearing witness to the cries of the world. And this Buddha who is awakened by the suffering of in the universe, whether it's our suffering, not our suffering, this Buddha who is called forth, this Buddha who experiences the suffering, and this Buddha who experiences the suffering, this is the suffering also of our knees and our crazy mind and our back and the heat and the sweat of sickness, old age, death, loss, change. This is the suffering that awakens the Buddha. Not to fix it, not to change it, to bear witness and let it in. And this Buddha is us. This Buddha, the source of compassion. This Buddha receives only compassion. Everything that comes towards us is received as compassion. Pain is received as compassion. The suffering of the world is received as compassion. being totally overheated, receive as compassion. The receiving of it is... And this practice, the practice of Zazen, the practice of Zen is continually about receiving our life, receiving our this universe. And this is fundamentally a compassionate practice. So, in this context, I'm going to talk about Tonglen. In Tonglen, which, as I've said, is a doing. It's something we're doing with our mind and life energy. And it's linked to the breath. So it requires a foundation of breath practice. Breathing in, on each in-breath, we breathe in all the suffering of the world, of the universe. We take it in. We receive it in the form of, and you can do this in whatever way kind of resonates with you, whether it's visualizing it as darkness and oppressiveness, or as is easy on nights like this, great heat. Breathing that in, breathing it in to the center of our being, breathing it in to what's called the hara, this space at the bottom, below the diaphragm, around a couple of fingers below the navel, breathing it in, or breathing it into the center of the chest, taking it in, and you can imagine any form of suffering. And you can imagine drawing it in from the people in the room. You can imagine drawing it in from the homeless. You can imagine drawing it in from all of the civilians and soldiers at war in Iraq and Afghanistan, anywhere in the world. You can imagine drawing it in from a dying loved one who may be in the room, not in the room, nearby, not nearby. You can draw it in from an enemy, someone who actively wishes to do you harm. And ultimately, that too is suffering, that wish to do harm is the expression of that poor suffering being's overrun mind. There is no one who cannot be included in this. And when we draw it in, we receive only. This is a practice of awakening a Buddha right here. Each in-breath, we breathe in the dark, the heavy, the constricted, the painful. Each out-breath, whatever measure of spaciousness, peace, liberation, lightness, coolness, okayness, whatever teeny little tiny bit we have, we give it all away. Holding nothing back. You can visualize this as light going out. If you're sitting with somebody suffering, you can visualize it as light coming out of your hands, or not, or out of your heart. It's an energetic practice, this breathing in all that is painful, all that is suffering, giving away everything, breathing out liberation, freedom, okayness. It doesn't matter how much of it we feel, This is not a practice about trying to feel anything. It's not about trying to feel the suffering of that other one. And it's not about trying to feel super compassionate about bestowing our wonderful blessings on that poor, miserable wretch. It's not that. Willingly taking on all the suffering, willingly taking on all the heavy, weighty, painful karma of suffering beings on ourselves alone, and giving away this freedom and okayness that actually has nothing to do with us, is not ours, cannot be held onto for us. And there's a way we can also practice this Tonglen. For this suffering being, this one here, this being who has such a difficulty with his mind, this one here who is struggling with judgmentalness, this one here who hates himself, this one here who really wishes it was 10 degrees cooler. But when we breathe it in, we are feeling all of what we're feeling. Breathing it in, concentrating it down, distilling it. And we breathe it out. We breathe it out, but if we're practicing Tonglen for this suffering being, it's not us. You can't be thinking of it as me. Even this suffering being is a being out there. Because the one breathing it in, this is the Buddha. This Buddha is awakened by the cries of the world. And it's important to not subvert this practice of Tonglen if you're doing this practice inclusive of your own suffering. And you shouldn't do it only of your own suffering. Inclusive of your own suffering. Whatever suffering you have, to breathe in all the suffering of all the beings everywhere who are struggling with their minds. All the beings everywhere who are uncomfortable in their circumstances. All the beings everywhere who are feeling something very much like this thing that is so easy for us to feel. To broaden it out, to include ourselves, to not be practicing for all beings but one. And to let our suffering be a kind of a reminder of the suffering of everyone else. To breathe this in. And then and if it's helpful to you, you can imagine kind of transforming this dark, heavy blackness. You can imagine condensing down like a diamond or a lump of coal is better, and then exploding out in light. Condense it completely down. Explode it out. Whatever imagery and way of working with your that stuff is useful to you. And practicing this some amount has an impact. It has an impact, you know, it changes your relation to especially people you may struggle with. To people who are difficult for you. To the things that are the triggers for your own energies of grasping and aversion. And so, and doing this, we don't do this in order to change anything. We don't do it to change them. We don't do it to change ourselves. And doing it completely in that spirit has an impact on the world. And then, even though we're not doing it to change anything, there are ways in which things change. But you can't do it to change things. It changes, it makes it a little bit easier in those interactions to pop out of that groove. It makes it a little bit easier to be the person you mean to be. That person, because you're building, you're strengthening the habit of kindness in your mind. You're strengthening the habit of letting in, of fellow feeling, of identifying with, rather than pushing away and separating from and being in conflict with. And then, and so then there are ways that that makes your mind more, the word is wieldy. It's the opposite of unwieldy. More able to be used fluidly, gently, flexibly. That's one way in which this kind of a doing has an impact on the one thing that is you in the universe. And then there's another way. No energy is ever lost. This you universe thing is a closed system. Putting out this energy is there's actually not an out, and it matters, and it has an impact through. It has there's a potential for an impact you may see or you may not, that it strangely changes how other people react to us. And this is also a good practice to do when there's nothing, when the suffering of the world is so great, there's no response that is sufficient. So definitely respond in the world when there's an earthquake or a flood or a tsunami. Do what in the world you are able to do. For instance, or volunteer your time, give money, whatever it is that you do. And also, this is a way of responding, of letting all of that in and responding. And there's another way. If you're sitting with somebody in some kind of acute distress, who also may be in a sleep or in a coma or anything like that, this is a way of being with that distress. And you may notice that it has an impact on that being there, even in some non-conscious state. But you can't be doing it in order to have that impact. So this is, and this practice of breathing in suffering, of seeing our suffering, of letting that remind us of all that similar suffering in the world, and taking that all in, and then giving away any such liberation as we may have, any comfort in any form, dharmic or physical or psychological or material, giving it away. Doing that also it's an antidote to self-cherishing. And we also, it also can be a tool through which we start to see through this very convincing storyline that I'm right here in the world out there. And as such, even this compassion practice is a wisdom practice. Even this practice of doing is a practice of realizing emptiness. So, what I want to do is take a couple of minutes to see if there are questions right now, or comments or complaints, as always. And then I want to for us to put 10 minutes on the clock and do this practice for 10 minutes, which means that putting aside our normal practice of zazen, putting aside our non-doing of shikantaza. And whenever the mind wanders anywhere, as it will do, return on an in-breath to breathing in suffering, breathing in the suffering, the cries, absorbing the sounds of the world. And then on the out-breath, breathing out this comfort, light, coolness, whatever it is, and returning to that. So instead of returning to one, if you're counting your breath, you return to breathing this in, condensing this, and then breathing out this light. So, right now, any questions, comments, or something?
Two questions. One is, previously something just very briefly about the history of this practice.
Sure.
And the second one is, I really appreciate this practice. And also, you may be curious to hear you say a little more about why you think that you compared and contrasted it with zazen as, you know, sort of making the point that zazen can't sort of fill up the groove or whatever. I'm curious to hear you say a bit more about that and whether, I don't know, whether you think there's potential for these practices to kind of resolve in a similar place over time.
Yeah, it's not can't. It's not that zazen can't. It's that we can help zazen along in that direction by doing that, by coming at it from this other direction. And this is important. You know, it's important. Zazen can do that and does often over years and years and probably decades and decades do that thing, that smoothing out. Zen stereotypically, and one of the shortcomings, one of the places that Zen students can get caught in the years before this leveling out starts to happen is Zen can have a tendency towards coldness and unkindness, and a little bit of austerity, and there's a way that if we're not turning towards the suffering of the world, zazen can become a place to hide from the suffering of the world. And coming at it from this other direction helps counteract that a little bit. It helps encourage us not to get stuck there. It's another way to help not get stuck there. That's the second part of your question. The first part of your question is that this is a Vajrayana practice, a practice from Tantric Buddhism, which exists in Japan, but is mainly comes from the Tibetan tradition. The word Tonglen is a Tibetan word which means taking and sending. And this practice, even in the Vajrayana tradition, was considered subversive and was kind of underground and not talked about for many centuries because it is so kind of counter to the impulses of what bring people to the Dharma. Can you speak up a little?
Energy, in and out, is it the sense that you transform the suffering into something else, or you just take it in whatever?
Yeah, there is that step of transformation, of like a kind of alchemical transformation, that the act of breathing it in, because this Buddha is awakened by the cries of the world, and this Buddha receives only compassion, this suffering comes in and is transmuted into what we send out. And how you work with that in your mind, you know, you can come up with some visual image or whatever. If that's helpful for you, if it's you know, and the image of it condensing down to a lump of coal, of black coal, and then exploding out as white light is one example of feeling this visceral bodily physical constriction coming in, breathing in that, and then the release of breathing that out is another way. So yes. It changes. Yes, feel free to visualize that step of change between the in-breath and the out-breath.
Mm-hmm. And in a way, how it's not creating mental formations with your visualization.
Shikantaza is not a practice of not creating mental formations. It's a practice of seeing all formations, all dharmas, as empty, even in their arising. And this discernment, this being able to see that form is exactly emptiness, can be the basis of then working in the Sambhogakaya realm with skillful usages of form. If your shikantaza is about trying to have some set of experiences and not some other set of experiences, including if it's about trying to have an experience of emptiness, of seeing through mental formations, then that is a limitation. And that said, this is not shikantaza. You can't be doing this concurrently with shikantaza.
I guess that's part of my question is how I've understood Zen practice as zazen and a dialectic in some way between shikantaza and koan perspective.
Mm-hmm. And part of what koan practice does is gradually steal away, or with kind of shaped charges, shaped explosive charges, detonate and destroy all of our treasured conceptions about what Zen is, about what koans are, about what shikantaza is, about what can and cannot be a practice of the way. And so I'm hearing here some of that going on. And so to use... and so part of the baseline of Zen, as we teach it, is the practice of not knowing, which is a practice of releasing our certainties. And especially when resistances arise, can't forget. So I would encourage you to take up that practice. But that said, you may not have an affinity for this practice, and that is fine. But it's useful to have, and as Ezra was saying in answer to Jeff's question, Zazen and koans and shikantaza will get you there. But there's that thing that, but it's something that comes later, potentially. And if you don't stick around long enough to get to that later, your Zazen might be a practice of cultivating a kind of purity of remove, distance. And so this is a way that, this is something that used in conjunction can used occasionally in conjunction can have some beneficial value for some people, sometimes, maybe. And there's not just one thing being taught. There's not just one thing being taught in Buddhism, in Zen, in Boundless Way, in koans, in the Mahayana schools as opposed to the Theravada and Vajrayana schools. There's many things. It's worth being able to kind of appreciate and see how these things work. And they have different strengths, different shadows. And this is a, it's a thing to know how to do in your mind. And it's worth having something else, and there are, yeah. So I'm gonna leave it at that. Did you want to respond to this, or did you have a different question?
You know that for years I was involved in the Christian contemplative tradition, and there's a similar sort of practice in that tradition. Where I found it really helpful was, when I was in particularly strong connections to things,
right.
And particularly things that were just very challenging, suffering situations.
And another related thing is this is something I do when I'm particularly caught in anger reactions at some and can get locked in into that. And so it's a tool and a toolkit in that way. Other questions? Something over here?
I'm trying to draw these different practices, and like, this is my first time seeing.
Yeah, and so it would be the fact that you're confused by all of these practices indicates that you're paying good attention.
I do have a question.
Yeah, each are complete.
I have a follow-up question, because I think that will help me as well. What is the goal of all of these practices?
Yeah.
I'm still trying to explain.
The goal is liberation amid suffering, which is different from liberation from suffering. Suffering arises. And this is a practice of not being caught in that suffering, not being caught in the suffering of greed, anger, and ignorance, and being able to be free in the arising of those, and being able to meet sickness, old age, death, loss, change, being able to meet all of those kinds of sufferings, and part and parcel of being able to be free amid all of those things is to be able to respond skillfully and kindly in the world when those things are present. And Buddhism teaches only one thing, and that's liberation. And all of these, what? That's right. Is the language I use for it. That's what this is all for, and all of these practices do that, and they do it in subtle and often mysterious ways, and all of these practices will, if practiced diligently and taken as far as they go, totally work, and you're not going anywhere. And all of it is right here, right now. And nothing needs to be changed. Nothing needs to be fixed. Nothing needs to be seen through. But that's where you end up. But you have to take the long way around, often. So the main practice that I would encourage you to take up, if you are interested in following the main ways of the way Zen is taught, and the main ways of Zen and the main tools that we use in this school of Zen, I would encourage you to start with this practice of counting your breath.
So just to be clear, each of the practices is a strategy to use in different situations to produce the same effect, which is liberation amid
in a way, yes, and in a way, part of what this practice is an abandonment of all strategies and a recognition of the inherent futility in any strategy that we are applying to fix a thing. So that's one side of the truth. The other side is that there's a way in which what you've said is true. And part of what this practice, that the spiritual path of Zen is about is being able to hold conflicting, seemingly conflicting sides. It's this way and it's not this way. Both of them are true. There's form that is form and its emptiness. There's the absolute perspective and the relative perspective. Both are true, and without reducing one to the other, without making one superior to the other, you know, there's a way in which the path is linear, and there's a way in which the path is circular. And then you average you combine the linear and the circular together, and there's a way in which the path is a kind of widening spiral. But all of those things are concurrently true. And this practice of letting concurrent and conflicting truths into our heart and mind is part of this practice too. And in the beginning, the main way we teach that is with noticing when stories arise, unhooking from the storyline, coming back to the breath, back to the posture, back to one. And to have this other thing in your back pocket to take out and check out once in a while.
I have a question about the actual practice of this. You said that in breathing in bringing in the suffering of the world, we can include ourselves as part of that world and bring in our own suffering. And in breathing out, when we give away everything out, well, let me not emphasize the out, but anyway, when we give it all away, can we not also give it away to ourselves?
We can give it away in a way that includes ourselves.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you are giving it away to yourself, then it becomes kind of narrowed and a fixing and a kind of grasping. But yes, definitely included. And even not included includes. One more question. Right, that.
Right, and so it's like the goals are just practice in a way.
That's right, the goals are a practice, and the goals are, in a way, provisional. But if Buddhism did nothing in the absolute sense, none of us would come back to a second painful ankle and back and knee period of zazen. But there's a way in which turning towards the reality of suffering, in which letting in all of this, even though there's not a goal and a fix, that there are ways to cause more and less suffering in our mind. And ultimately, we have to abandon even that as a kind of goal. There's an absolute view of the spiritual path and of the practices in which there is fundamentally no goal and nothing to be done and nothing doable. And there's an instrumentalist view in which what you're doing is doing something, paying attention to how you use your mind. The habit energies you sustain or don't sustain in your mind matters. That's the teaching of karma. Your karma matters. And to fall into there's a particularly pernicious kind of nihilism that says that which is not, I think, what you're saying, but that says that you don't have to pay attention to what you're doing, to the karma you're creating with body, speech, and thought, because there's no goal and it's all the same. This is another example of, there's a way in which there's goals, there's a way in which there's no goals. And we don't need to ultimately collapse one into the other, but we need to recognize, we need to hold those goals loosely and recognize that they are just provisional tools, skillful means in this moment. And the Buddhist term for skillful means in Sanskrit is upaya. All of this is upaya. Counting the breath is upaya. Talking about, you know, having bells, sitting on the cushion, having a special place that we're practicing something is upaya. All of it is skillful means. And in an important way, none of it is essential. But I, for one, have found it enormously helpful and have put a lot of my life into, helping there to be a space with cushions we can also. So, all right, quick question from James, then we're going to try this out.
Okay. Checking out with
beautiful summation. Thank you. So, 10 minutes? So I want to encourage everyone during these 10 minutes to do this practice of Tonglen, even if this is the only time you do it in your life. If this is your first time here, please also feel free to carry on the practice of counting your breath, which can be a foundation for Tonglen too. So, for those of you who it's not your first time here, use these 10 minutes to practice Tonglen, and then we'll close with the Bodhisattva vows.